Welcome to Green and Gold Forever. I'm Eric Drews, broadcasting from Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and we'll be joined shortly here by Matt McLean, and he's actually from Altoona, not Eau Claire, I guess.
Right.
And so that's right next door to Lavernius Colza, right?
Exactly. Okay. Nobody else is going to get that joke.
There might be a Jets fan or two out there, right? Or a Badgers fan. Altoon was a Badger.
Yep.
All right, so the Packers won again, so unofficially clinching a playoff spot, if you read my article. I obviously don't believe that, but very impressive showing, beating the Raiders 31-21, and much like the Rams game, it was not that close throughout. The Packers at one time had a 24-point lead, and then the Raiders kind of eroded it with four stringers in there towards the end of the game. The big story coming out of this game is the two injuries to the starters, but before we get into that, let's talk the positives about this one for a change, and let's start with Eddie Lacy. And I know we talked quite a bit about him last week, but in a very, very small sample, holy cow, does this guy look good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of scary for other teams to think about what we could possibly be on offense this year. If he's running like that in the regular season on top of our pass game, I don't know if we're going to be able to be stopped. I guess that's kind of part of the reason why I started feeling a little bit more confident against teams like maybe Seattle and San Francisco this year, is just because, you know, maybe we can outscore everybody. Just because if you have that lethal of a 1-2 punch, how are you stopped? I mean, he looks like one of the best running backs in the league right now, and he very well could be.
Yeah, and it's one thing the Packers haven't had with this dynamic, high-scoring offense is they haven't had balance. Mm-hmm. Even last year, with Lacy kind of coming on, when they can't pass the ball, they still don't win. Eddie Lacy had a phenomenal month of November, and the Packers went 0-4-1. So if they could have that balance with Aaron Rodgers in there, so even if Rodgers is having a bad day, the threat for the pass will be there. It'll be better than having Flynn, and then Eddie Lacy can come in and maybe win them a game that otherwise they have no business winning. Their defense still needs to be better, mind you, but if they have balance, they now have multiple ways to score, and you could conceivably see a game in which Aaron Rodgers doesn't play his best, and they could still score 24, 27 points.
Oh, absolutely. And I think in the sideline interview he did during the game, he just was talking about how he doesn't have to think about as much what he's doing. He could just be more instinctual and run harder, which makes a lot of sense if you're a running back thinking about which holes you're supposed to be in and, you know, what you're supposed to read. Whereas this year, if he knows the offense a little better and he can just go full bore on every play, that's a scary thought if you're a linebacker and he's coming at you.
Yeah, he seems almost impossible to tackle right now.
Yeah.
And granted, that'll probably change as the season goes on and he gets worn down a bit, but you mentioned the sideline interviews. He's had two of the weirdest sideline interviews.
Yeah, that hat one.
He had the hat one, and then in the Rams game, I think Rod Burks from, I can't remember if he's at WTMJ.
Was it that Family Guy one?
Yeah, he had never heard of Family Guy.
Yeah, that made him look stupid.
Yeah, and he talked about it like it was the Care Bears, that, oh my gosh, Eddie Lacy watching a cartoon, a big tough guy watching a cartoon. I'm like, oh, you just sound like a moron. It's not exactly, you know, Muppet Babies.
Yeah, apparently he's never watched afternoon Fox football because doesn't that come on like right after the games pretty much?
I think it does. Or endless
after that or something, yeah.
He must go to bed before 9 o'clock because all of the local stations that I have Family Guy somewhere between the hours of 10 and, you know, the 6 a.m. news shows.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah, so not only that, and here's something I noticed, and maybe you'll agree, that as a whole, I don't think the Packers' offense looked as crisp as they did the other 2 weeks. I'm talking the first teamers. They had a couple of three and outs. They had a lot of drop passes. And it felt very 2011-like, where you're watching this and you're like, gosh, these guys are just shooting themselves in the foot. And then you look at the scoreboard and you're like, oh, wait, they got 21 points on the board.
Yeah.
It was very 2011-like, where you'd see, I think of that Raider game that year, where it didn't feel like the offense was doing that great, and there were drives that stalled, and they were shooting themselves in the foot, and then it's 31-0 at halftime.
Yeah, I can agree with that. It seems a lot very 2011-ish against some of those bad teams. But, I mean, still, Rodgers still threw two touchdowns in limited action. He was only 9 for 20.
There was a ton of drops.
Yeah, I guess I won't read too much into that. I don't think the drops will be there during the regular season. And they looked so good last week that, you know, maybe would like to see some of those things go away. But they were still up by a bunch when they got out of the game. So I think, you know, it's still only the third preseason game, and Rodgers has barely played with some of these guys so far in the preseason. So I think that those things will kind of go away.
Yeah, and I was meaning to say that in a positive manner, that this is a team that on, you could argue on Friday, missed a lot of opportunities, and they still scored three times in six possessions. So yeah. When they're running on all cylinders, they're going to score 60 points, is basically what I was saying.
Sure. Yeah, and you don't get to play a team like Oakland every week where that's going to happen. I mean, if you don't have your A game against some of the better teams, obviously you're not going to be up by 17 points in the blink of an eye. But, no, I completely agree. They didn't look on, and they were still, you know, just thrashing that Raiders defense.
Yeah, and the Raiders look like they did in the offseason what I used to do when I was getting bored on Madden and just sign every single old Pro Bowler I could find. I could not believe some of the names they had on that team. Apparently, I was asleep during the offseason because I didn't know they had guys like Justin Tuck, and now I can't remember them, but there were a ton of guys.
Some of them, but I didn't know it was nearly that many, and Lamar Woodley, and there was a whole lineup of the guys they had signed, and you really don't see that anymore, especially like a Reggie McKenzie team. That seems kind of strange to be built completely on free agents, and pretty much all their starters are replaced from last year.
Well, when you're arguably in the division with, at least one of the top two quarterbacks, another one who's comfortably in the top 10 on Eric's list, not so much on Matt's, and then also maybe the best second or third running back in the NFL all in your division, he might have thought that, hey, we got to get some help this year and not try to build through the draft like Ted and John Schneider and those other guys would.
Well, and I think it's life of a modern GM, too, though, is he knows, McKenzie knows, if he doesn't get something going here in the next year or two, he's gone, so he can't afford to build through the draft right now, even though it may be the best thing for the team in the future. He's got to sign these, you know, mercenaries basically to come in for a year or two and try to at least win him some games and turn things around a little bit.
Yeah, does he have the Carson Palmer trade on his watch?
It probably would have been, yeah. I think this is his third year.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right.
So maybe it was one of his first moves, or maybe it was right before he got there. I don't recall.
Yeah, I think you're right. It seems a little bit unreasonable to expect them to compete in that division right now, but, you know, I mean, that's how it is now. People in Cleveland's been recycling coaches and GMs like they have these massive expectations when they have two of the most successful franchises of this century in their own division, and then the Bengals have been actually, they've made the playoffs five, six times, you know, in the last 10 years, so...
Right.
If Cleveland can be that irrational, I guess why can't the Raiders, who actually have history?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so now let's talk about the negative, which was B.J. Raji tearing his bicep. It was announced today that he's going to have season-ending surgery due to a season-ending injury, so he's going to be out. J.C. Treader has a fractured knee, which Mike McCarthy said is an injury that will keep him out for multiple weeks. So read into that as you will. A lot of people speculating that they might use the reactivation IR slot or whatever the official name for that is. Essentially, you can put someone on injured reserve and then bring them back after 6 weeks. It's what they used last year to open up a roster spot when Randall Cobb got hurt and then still bring him back later in the season.
Sure.
I think last year was the first year that was allowed.
So. Yeah, I think so.
So relatively new. You seem to be less concerned about this than I was, talking about B.J. Raji. The J.C. Treader story broke later yesterday. And I guess to begin, what is your overall assessment of these two injuries, and which do you think will play a bigger impact?
Yeah, I mean, I basically shook off the Raji injury as I told you, you know, an injury like this to an average to good player seems to happen on every team. Everybody loses a guy like that. But then the Treader one right after that, and then I was kind of like, all right, shoot. That kind of stinks. I mean, overall, if those are the two biggest guys that you lose all year, you're probably still in a pretty good spot because everybody's going to incur injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can afford to lose one position on offense, it's probably the center.
Yeah,
and he's an inexperienced guy to begin with. He's looked good, but you may get him back, and you could probably throw somebody in at center and hide him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas at defensive tackle, B.J. Raji, yeah, you'd much rather have him in there than not have him in there, and I think he's a good player. He gets a bad rap, and I guess I'm not overly crazy about him, but this is a guy who went out to try to test free agency, and nobody wanted him, basically.
That's true.
I mean, he's not a Pro Bowler anymore and hasn't been, and I think that this is a position where – you know, you could find somebody, whether it's a guy you're re-signing or a guy who's already on the team, or, you know, the Patriots just cut a guy like Tommy Kelly. You can just plug a big body in there,
mm-hmm.
and if everybody else does their job, I think you can still manage. So I think they're obviously bad injuries, you don't want to have things like that, but to me, those are two that you can kind of work around and kind of still survive even with those two.
Yeah, you make a good point, and one of the things I was telling you this weekend, and I was just concerned that once you get Raji out of there, if you don't have a suitable replacement, teams are just going to run it down our throats every game. But they were almost doing that anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I guess they could put somebody in there. I know a lot of people have been talking about Ryan Pickett, who I don't think would be a bad try. He feels kind of at this point like he might be a little Tauscher-like, where you expect him to maybe be a savior and he's out of shape and gets injured or something like that. But I certainly think it would be worth a try.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, why not? Bring him in there and see what can happen. The other one that a lot of people are talking about is Jerone Elliott. How do you say his first name?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, and I guess I haven't seen enough of him. He's new on the block, and he had another really nice game against the Raiders. My only concern is when I saw him get his sack against the Raiders, he looked a lot smaller than B.J. Raji, and maybe he's more athletic. It'll make the defense a little bit faster, but you also need some guy to occupy space, as you mentioned, and the defensive ends that we have are quite lean as it is. I mean, Datone Jones is not huge, although I'm not sure what Mike Daniels can do at that position, but certainly there's the option of bringing him inside and maybe using Julius Peppers a little bit more than you thought, use Elliott as a defensive end. You definitely have some options there, so I think they can cover for B.J. Raji as much as you wouldn't. You're not going to be as dynamic, but you're not going to be hurt as much necessarily. I think Treader's the bigger loss. People were talking about how great a camp he had. Larry McCarron, actually, in the NBC 26 Packer guide that they pass out at the grocery stores in my area, actually named J.C. Treader as his favorite player this year.
Wow. He's
probably a little biased on that. But people were excited about him, and now you have to play a rookie in Corey Linsley, who people are excited about as well, but you add that to the Don Barclay injury, and now all of a sudden your offensive line is much thinner than expected. If they lose another guy on that line, they could be in big trouble.
Yep. You're right. Paper thin, basically, at this point, and it seems that's the way they've been operating for the last 5 years, but they just can't afford another loss.
Yeah, and so we'll see what happens there, and we've said it for years on this show. Yeah, well, gosh, this is our third season, so I guess I can say that and be truthful. You just said it, that you can hide a bad center. A center doesn't matter. Jeff Saturday had a very rough season in 2012, and they were still one of the best offenses in the NFL. Last year, Evan Dietrich Smith was the center. I think people said he was okay, but I feel like nobody was considering him one of the best centers in the NFL, so that might be an injury that you can handle on the offensive line, but I guess I'm more worried about the overall depth. You could have worked Linsley in as a guard to help cover for the Barclay injury, and now he is the center, whether they like it or not.
Yep.
All right, and while we're talking injuries, I don't know how many games you watched this weekend, but wow, was this a slap in the face for the return of real NFL football. The preseason, you always kind of work out the kinks, and you're excited football's back, and it's the summer, and you're watching carefree games, and I know people dog on the preseason, but I always enjoy watching games that don't matter. You kind of get back into the swing of things slowly. You can watch your team lose, or you can watch one of your rivals win big, and it really doesn't matter. But this week, it felt like a slap of reality, because I watched the Packer game, I watched the two games yesterday, and I even caught a little bit of a high school game on ESPN as the whole football world is going back to play. And I think I saw seven guys carted off the field. I saw two guys leave on a stretcher. I saw a ton of injuries. You had B.J. Raji, you had Treader. There's guys like Sammy Watkins who got hurt. LeSean McCoy got hurt. You have Sam Bradford who re-tore his ACL after we speculated about it last week, which I feel a little bit bad about. But this has been something we've talked about constantly since this podcast has existed, but what can be done, and maybe nothing can be done, but everything in the last 3 or 4 years has been about reducing injuries, reducing the wear and tear caused by practice and by training camp, and none of it seems to matter.
I don't know. I guess I kind of have the feeling this year that it actually hasn't been as bad as it has in the past. Maybe it's just been less, like, super notable guys. I know Cam Newton got a little bit hurt, too.
Mm-hmm.
But really, all the
Yeah, everybody
guys...
on my fantasy team. Watkins, McCoy, Newton, all on my team. Matt Stafford's going to jam his hand in a car door tonight, probably, and then I'll lose all my games.
I guess, though, other than, you know, like Raji and Bradford, I don't think too many of them are super serious, at least from what I've heard. I guess I didn't hear about Watkins or anything, but, I mean, it's part of the game. What do you do? I mean, you can't eliminate all these. I guess I've kind of felt like, yeah, I watched that Niners-Chargers game, and I think three guys got taken off on stretchers.
Yeah.
Which is obviously not fun to watch, but...
The Bengals and Cardinals had three last night, I think.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
No, they both did. I watched both. You're right. They both had guys getting carted off left and right.
So it's unfortunate, but I mean, I think the NFL's doing the right things, and other than Brandon Merriweather, everybody's getting the point of not, you know, launching with the helmet anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to maybe be taking a turn in the right direction. I don't know. It's such a small sample size, but I don't know what else you can do. I don't think you can do anything else.
Yeah, for the most part, I think you're right. But I am, having just said I like the preseason, I am starting to come around to the crowd that says the preseason is too long. And after seeing how great the Packers have been the last two games, it's clear that your starters don't need it. They can be good, they can get through mini camp and training camp, and they can be at the top of their game. One of the arguments has always been that you'll see bad football if we just go right away, have two preseason games, and just throw right into the regular season, we're going to have bad football. And I've probably said that. It's clear, if you've been watching the games, that that's not true. Your best players have looked like the best players in the NFL the last couple of preseason games. Rodgers looks absolutely at the top of his game, mid-season form. You could say the same about Manning and Brady, and Drew Brees on Saturday night against the Colts was just tearing people apart. Those guys are ready to play. And you think about so many of the guys that got hurt last week. If they still would have got hurt, it at least would have been week one. You know, so it's at least for a it's for a reason. You hate to say that, but at least you're getting hurt trying to accomplish something that'll actually count at the end of the season. And I don't know about you, but for the first time ever, I think I am ready for that two preseason game model.
I guess I would still disagree with you at this point. I could see them maybe going to three, so you get that middle game where the starters can play pretty much the whole time, or at least the full half.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think two is enough. I think that if you were... just think of it from a practice standpoint. If you were to only get two practice games going into it and then go right to regular season, that just seems so quick.
Mm-hmm.
And players can get hurt in practices all the time. It's not just in games. I mean, they're getting hurt all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I guess if they did go to the two... I wouldn't throw up a big fit, but I do like the preseason games. I think four is a good number.
Yeah.
And I think unless they're adding on regular season games, that's probably not going to change, and in which case just as many players are going to be getting hurt
mm-hmm.
in the regular season. I guess, like you said, maybe it matters more, but does it really? I don't know. I just
that's true.
I like the way things are now, but I'm sure you're right, and I'm sure things will probably be changing in the near future.
Yeah, and I guess maybe I'm trying to make myself feel better that I maybe agree with one of the ridiculous changes that the NFL is trying to make. The 18-game schedule is something that they're trying really hard to have done. I think that seventh playoff team that's going to start next year is part of that. I can't remember what it was now, but there was another ridiculous thing I heard about of people trying to change stuff. So I guess I'm just trying to feel happy that one of these seemingly fundamental changes to the NFL that we grew up with, I can actually be on board with, because
sure.
They're going to switch the extra point. Oh, they were talking about making the goalposts narrower. So.
That's right. They were taller, too, or something, weren't they?
Yeah. Well, they already are taller because the Patriots lost the game,
supposedly.
Because of that. But I'm waiting for maybe they'll wave in and out, you know, because apparently they hate field goal kickers, and... I don't know. I'm still waiting for somebody in the preseason to lose a game 19-20 on an extra point miss, or actually what would probably make people hate the rule was if you had a fourth preseason game that was 20-20, and then a team had just scored what should have been the game-winning touchdown 21-20, and then the guy misses the extra point and you have to play 15 minutes of overtime with fourth stringers.
Yeah.
So maybe that would get people pissed off, but whatever, a little bit of a rant there. So I don't really have anything else for the NFL landscape this week. Now, I always say that, and then I think of something as I'm saying that. So What about Peyton Manning taunting? Did you see that?
I didn't, no.
Well, apparently, one of the Houston Texans defenders, I can't remember his name, it doesn't really matter, he hit Wes Welker in what his teammates thought was kind of a late hit or an, you know, unnecessary roughness kind of hit.
Right.
And on the next play, Peyton Manning threw a touchdown pass and ran all the way down the field and got in this guy's face and started yelling at him.
Nice.
Yeah, it was very tame compared to what you think of taunting as, but he got a flag and his teammates were kind of going nuts, and I know Deadspin did a thing on it. They show gifs of it on Deadspin, and it really isn't much, but I thought it was kind of funny that Peyton Manning would run down the field and get in a dude's face and look like he's ready to fight, defending his teammates, so that was kind of cool.
Well, I would too. Poor Welker. I mean, he's probably done now.
Yeah,
I mean, he's got three concussions in 10 months.
It's been that many?
Yeah, he had two last year.
Oh, man. How old is he? He's got to be like
32, 33 or something
like that. Yeah, that's about what I was going to guess too. So, gosh, I hope not. That would not be good.
I guess I would have been pretty fired up too if I was Peyton. But yeah, that's rough. I mean, you almost don't want him to come back at that point. He's on my fantasy team, and I'm telling him to maybe hang him up just because, you know, you don't want to see what he's going to be 10 years from now if he gets another one.
Yeah, that's not
or
very
already.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe he will, but I was just glad that now the NFL will probably make taunting allowable since Peyton Manning did it.
Yeah, right. They'll remove that penalty.
Do you have anything you want to talk about that you saw this weekend? Anything interesting?
I guess nothing really stood out to me too much. I'm just I'm ready for some regular season. I'm just I'm kind of sick of this now. So maybe to your point, I'm ready for week one to start here. I guess nothing huge taken away from me.
San Diego and San Francisco had some cool contrast in uniforms.
Yes, those are good.
Yeah. So, what do you think about that huge new stadium of San Francisco's that people talk about like it's the Roman Coliseum?
Yeah, that looked pretty cool. I liked how they had a lot of the open air kind of on the corners. That was kind of nice, and it held together through an earthquake, so that's good.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Randy Moss is horrible.
Yeah. He was so bad.
When Kurt Menefee basically gave lip service to the earthquake and said, this stadium survived the earthquake and we just want to extend our thoughts and prayers to all the people that were affected by the earthquake. Randy Moss's response to that was, yeah, Kurt, I was lucky that I slept through it this morning. And then he's like, oh yeah, but also I feel for those people who were injured today. I'm like,
yeah.
Randy Moss is like, oh, it's okay, Kurt, I slept fine. When he's talking about a region-wide natural disaster.
And I forget exactly what was said, but, like, Kurt threw it to him to say something, and Randy Moss said something, and it was wrong. He said something about it being the fourth week of the preseason.
Oh, yeah.
After he said it, he, like, looked at Kurt all freaked out, like he said something wrong, and Kurt was like, it's okay. He, like, gave him a little head nod, and then Randy kept going. It's like, oh, he's so bad. He's not meant for TV.
Well, at least he didn't call Travis Henry a rookie when he was about in his eighth season like Emmett Smith did way back in the day.
It's funny because I've heard, like, I listened to, I think it was on SVP, they were talking about some of these athletes that have tried to do, you know, broadcasting stuff afterwards, and they've talked about the fact that, like, Emmett Smith was pretty much the worst on there.
Yeah. And we've been making fun of him for, gosh, it's almost 10 years now, probably.
Yeah, so bad.
Yeah, he was horrible. All right, so for some other random musings about the NFL, let's go to Crossfire. And that signifies the beginning of Crossfire, the segment where Matt and I exchange topics in a rapid-fire fashion. It never seems to happen that way, but that's the attempt. We can talk about anything, Packers, NFL, history, whatever is on our minds. And you can get involved in this as well. If you ever have a topic that crosses your mind, let us know on the Facebook page. Otherwise, you can tweet us at @greengoldforever. That's the number 4. We're much more active on Twitter lately, so follow us on there. You'll hear my kind of crazy rantings about the referees during the games and other comments during the games and whatnot. But, Matt, I think we'll have you start this go-around. What's your first Crossfire topic?
All right. My first one is a Green Bay Packers question for you here.
Okay.
So my question to you is, on the current Packers roster, so injuries and everything included, which one of these mid-90s Packers are you going to resurrect at their prime and throw onto our roster? So both talent and fit.
Okay.
Keep them in mind here.
Yep.
Okay, so we've got Gilbert Brown.
Yep.
Frank Winters,
uh-huh,
Robert Brooks, or George Koontz?
Ooh. So I'm guessing that the first two you selected were based upon the injuries to Raji and Treader. Is that true?
Yeah, I guess overall just areas of need.
Okay. At their prime. The best player of that bunch at their peak is easily Robert Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
He had a ridiculous season in 1995, and it was on pace for a pretty darn good season in 1996 before the injury. I actually read more about his injury recently. I thought it was just a torn ACL. It was a torn ACL, PCL, MCL, and patella tendon. He basically destroyed his knee, and that's why he only played a couple more seasons before going off into the sunset. I think I'll take Gilbert Brown. I think Koontz was a fun guy. He was the coon of the 90s teams. I think he was a heady player, but I don't know.
Would you not take him over AJ Hawk at this point, or Brad Jones?
I would take him over Brad Jones. I don't know. I feel like he is a wash with AJ Hawk, maybe, at this point. I know AJ's here and now, but Koontz in 1996 was really good, but outside of that, he was just kind of on the team. You never really noticed him that much. I feel like AJ has done more, and maybe the defense now is much more dynamic than the Fritz Schirmer defense, who didn't do hardly anything. They stood in zone and played man-to-man on the outside and let Reggie and Sean Jones and Santana Dotson rush the quarterback. But I still think AJ and Koontz are close. Robert Brooks is awesome. He's the best player of that bunch, but I don't think we need him on this team. He's not as good as Randall Cobb or Jordy Nelson. Gilbert Brown ate up a ton of space, and I don't think that those teams would have been as good as they were without Gilbert to eat up the middle, force guys to the outside where they were eaten alive by those really good linebackers and guys like Leroy Butler. So I'll take Gilbert Brown.
Yeah, and I tend to agree with you. I was kind of actually between that and Frank Winters, actually, just because it would be nice to throw somebody solid in there in the middle to kind of stabilize things now that Treader's out.
And
but
you know we could use from Frank Winters? Maybe we were blinded to it because we were kids, but I've been watching a ton of those games the last couple of years. Frank Winters was a dick, like,
yeah,
big time. And we could need, you know, we could use one of those guys. Yeah, we could use one of those guys on the team.
Yeah, I think Gilbert, though, I think you're right. If you have a guy in the middle who can just eat up that kind of space, and I think he's, maybe you disagree with me, but I think he's was better in his prime than Raji has been for us. So
yeah, I think you're right.
I think a guy like that would be huge for this team right now, and somebody who can make a couple of plays here and there, too. So I would take Gilbert as well.
Well, and not only would we take that, I don't know if you remember, but in the 2003 preseason, Gilbert's last season in the NFL, he tore both of his biceps,
yes,
in the preseason, and he decided to play with them. I don't remember how long into that season he played, because that was the year that they got, was that Grady Jackson they got that year?
That sounds right.
But the big thing I remember is that he played right after it was announced that he tore both of his biceps, and it was in a preseason game, I believe it was against Carolina, but I don't remember, where the first possession, we'll say it's the Panthers, drove down to like the 1 yard line, and they went for it on fourth and goal and third and goal at the one, and Gilbert stopped them both times, and the crowd went insane.
Yeah.
It's one of my all-time preseason memories. All right, so I'll go here, unless you have anything else to add to Gilbert's great preseason.
Go for it.
Okay. Recently, I was going through my storage closet here at my place, and I found some tapes of NFL primetime that I had taped back when Matt and I were in high school, and this was from the 2002 season, and it just brought back so many storylines that I had forgotten about. Chad Pennington and Jeremy Shockey and Ricky Williams and Michael Vick, these guys were talked about like they were going to be Hall of Famers. And then there's the flash in the pan guys like Anthony Thomas and William Green. And I just thought to myself how every season has a plethora of interesting storylines that are forgotten almost instantly. Unless you're on Green and Gold Forever, we tend to remember them longer. And so, Matt, I want to know, we asked in the past what your favorite Packers seasons were. What was your favorite NFL season that you have seen in our time watching football? And I'm talking storylines, I'm talking playoffs, however you want to interpret that. What is the best NFL league-wide season you remember?
Oh, man. I knew this was going to require too much thought here. I mean, it's different, because, I mean, if you think about some of the seasons we watched growing up, those are always special to us. I mean, like, 95, 96, I would probably be inclined to say 96.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, there's been so many good recent seasons, too, with really good playoffs and upsets, and,
mm-hmm.
and the Packers still having been good for pretty much the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to really pick a season that the Packers weren't good in. But, I mean, there's always good storylines every year. I guess I have to maybe cop out and say 96, but I don't know how you beat that.
Yeah, 96 was really good. Obviously the Packers, but you had some other storylines like Jacksonville and Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Carolina, yep.
Were super interesting that year. I'm trying to think. 1995 was really good.
Yeah.
You had the Colts playoff run. You had the Packers.
That Colts-Steelers game.
Yeah, that Colts-Steelers game was great. That Packer-Cowboy game was great. And really, that was the first great Super Bowl we saw, because they all sucked before that.
Yeah.
That Chargers-49ers one was pretty bad. I'm inclined to say, and I'm going to try to avoid the Packers Super Bowl years, because 2010 was pretty good, too. The playoffs were great that year, almost across the board. But I'm going to say either 2001 with the 9/11 stuff. You had the weird season. It was the last year of the old format of the NFL.
That's right.
You had the Patriots kind of worst to first. You had the Packers chasing the Bears. It was when Donovan McNabb kind of made his ascendance. There has to be some other stuff, you know, good stuff in there that obviously I'm missing. The Tom Brady thing.
Yeah. Yep.
It's pretty clear. Beating the Rams, who were still the Rams at that time.
Yeah, that was a great one.
But I guess I'm going to say 2003, and I know I already named that as my favorite non-Packers championship season, but I loved those Carolina Panthers. And
yeah,
then you had the,
that's true.
That team was so much fun. You had Bill Parcells' Cowboys with maybe the worst roster he's ever taken to the playoffs. They had Quincy Carter starting a playoff game with Troy Hambrick as their feature running back. You had those great storylines. You had the Patriots were awesome that year. Peyton Manning was super good. Steve McNair was co-MVP. You have some other stuff in there, like, I think Jamal Lewis broke the record that year, ran for 295 yards. The Brett Favre thing was obviously just ridiculously entertaining. Those playoffs, despite the 4th-and-26, how bad that was, I would think that top to bottom, the 2003 playoffs were the best playoffs I've ever seen. Almost every game was phenomenal. That was that one weekend when you had the Packers-Eagles, you had the Chiefs against the Colts in that ridiculous game, you had that cold game against the Titans against the Patriots, and then you had the double overtime Mark Bolger Rams against the Panthers, and Steve Smith had like a million yards receiving.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to pick a season, 2003 is my favorite.
Sure, that was a good one too. I think 01. I think if I maybe can rethink things here, the 01 was pretty awesome. That was a great year.
Yeah. 05 sucked.
Yeah, 05 was the worst. All right, I'll give you my next one here. I've got a couple of quarterback questions for you here, and this one comes straight from Drew Kuchar, who wanted us to talk about Johnny Manziel since we haven't done so far.
Right.
He was really interested in that. So
long-time fan.
Yep. So over or under 8 games for Johnny Football this year, starting?
I'm going to say under, and just barely under. I think he'll start by October. They're going to have to put him in. Because as much as they've talked about this Hoyer versus Manziel, they've talked about Brian Hoyer like he's Alex Smith or something. He's started 3 games. I mean, he's nothing. We don't know how good he's going to be. I haven't been impressed by him at all in any of their preseason games. I think Manziel will get in, but he's going to make mistakes. He's going to have some epically bad Brett Favre kind of games where he's throwing 4 and 5 interceptions. So I think the way it's going to go is he and his attitude is going to make it easier for this, is that he's going to get yo-yoed around, for the lack of a better term. I feel like Hoyer will start 0-3. They'll put in Manziel. He'll flare up and then flame out, and then they'll put Hoyer back in, and then they'll go to Manziel. And Manziel's playing style also lends him to be injured, I think, maybe for a game or two. So I think he'll start 6 or 7 games.
that's a good point with the injuries. I guess I'll still say over, just because I thought going into the year everybody was saying that Manziel would be starting after the bye, which I think is week five for them. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of thinking, you know, Hoyer looked pretty darn good in those 2.5 games he played last year, so I figured he could maybe hold them off. Mm-hmm. But they both looked so bad. And I guess to me, what's the point of keeping a bad Hoyer in there as opposed to a bad Manziel who can go in and maybe try to learn some things? So, mm-hmm. Barring injury, I would think that maybe Manziel gets in by week 6 or 7, maybe with some spot duty before that. So I guess I'll say over.
Yeah, and I could see that too. Mini crossfire. What the heck's Jacksonville thinking starting Chad Henne after the way Bortles has played?
They're just, I mean, maybe good for them. I mean, they're just so determined to not play him, it seems like, this year. I guess I haven't seen a whole lot of Jacksonville preseason, but I've heard that he's looked really good mm-hmm. and is clearly the best quarterback on the roster, but they don't want to ruin him, I guess, on a bad team. I'm not sure. Maybe that's their thought.
But why, though? This is not 1985. Name a rookie quarterback that's ended up good that sucked his first year. Andrew Luck, Russell Wilson, RG3, almost everybody that they've put in that was halfway decent has been good since the first second they got in.
Right. No, and I agree. I just think they were set from day one that he wasn't going to play, and they're not going to shift from that. But I think he'll be another guy who finds his way in once Chad Henne is Chad Henne after a few weeks.
Yeah. All right, it's your turn.
All right. Yeah, I can do another one here. Next question here is actually a college football question with the season starting this weekend here already. Give me your NCAA Final Four for the playoffs.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. I want to say it's going to be Wisconsin. If they win on Saturday, they have a chance. But they don't play Ohio State or Michigan State. And I think not only is that going to hurt Wisconsin, is there a chance to get in the top four, it's going to hurt the other two teams. The Big Ten has about three teams that are decent. You could say that maybe Penn State's coming on.
Nebraska's here now and then.
Yeah, Nebraska's here now and then. But none of those have enough respect right now to where it's going to be impressive for Michigan State and Wisconsin or Ohio State and Wisconsin to have good seasons and not cross paths. Granted, you always have the Big Ten title game. I think Oklahoma might be in there this year. I've heard good things about them. That's tough. The off-season for college football, to me, these people vanish. So I almost need a couple of weeks to remember who's good and who's not. Who else can I put up in
Florida
there?
State would probably be up for sure, huh?
Yeah, I forgot about Florida State with James Winston. I feel like Auburn's going to fall back to the pack, and I don't know who Alabama's playing at quarterback, but I'll throw Alabama in there. They've lost, what, 3 football games in 4 years like that? So I'll throw them in there. So I'll say Oklahoma, Alabama. Let's throw Florida State in there on your suggestion, and I think whoever wins the Pac-10 will be the other team.
So no Big Ten teams, you're saying?
No, because I think even if they have good seasons, there's so little respect for the Big Ten right now that I think unless you have a one-loss or undefeated Michigan State against Wisconsin in the title game, you're undefeated, you're almost going to have to be undefeated to come out of there because sure. Wisconsin, once if they beat LSU, Wisconsin doesn't play anybody decent the rest of the year.
I can see that. And I picked Bama, too, just kind of by default. It seems like everybody lost their quarterback in the SEC, but somebody's going to come out, and I guess they're probably as loaded as anybody. So I picked them out. Florida State, for sure. I picked Oregon out of the Pac-12.
That's what I would pick, too.
I was kind of waffling. I hear UCLA constantly, but I guess they haven't proven anything to me yet, and I think that Oregon with Mariota again can maybe beat Stanford for once.
Yeah.
And I actually did pick Wisconsin, too.
Okay.
I think they've got a pretty good shot on Saturday. LSU's quarterbacks are splitting time, apparently, between a freshman and a sophomore.
Okay.
So I think you've got a good shot to go in there and win. If you can go through the rest of the regular season with maybe one loss, mm-hmm. or if that's your one loss, but if you beat LSU at the beginning of the year, that's your big win.
And everybody's going to see it.
Yeah, exactly. So you may not have a great rest of the schedule, but you'll have to play Nebraska, which is a good win.
Yep.
And you'll play in the Big Ten championship game, which is going to be a big win, probably against Michigan State if you can do it.
And I think in order for that to count, they're going to have to play a team with no fewer than two losses in that Big Ten championship game.
Oh yeah, and I don't think that should be a problem because I think the other side of that. The other division is loaded, and ours is weak, so you're probably going to get, a Michigan or an Ohio State or a Michigan State team. I mean, they're all in Penn State,
too. And Penn State's over there, too. But, now with Braxton Miller out, I don't see how it's not Michigan State.
Yeah, that, and that's what I'm thinking too. So if you can go in there.
Are you there?
So,
oh. Yep. I lost you for a second.
Okay, I'm back now.
All right, so what did you say? Because it went silent. So if you can, so right after I had said Michigan State.
And I guess I like their chances better against Michigan State than, say, a healthy Ohio State team. So if that's who they have to face, I like their chances. So I think that they can pull it off if they can make it to the championship game. Or I think they can make it to the playoffs with one loss, because I think those Big 12 teams just kind of beat up on each other and they all end up with four losses, it seems like.
Do you remember the guy who's going to start for Ohio State now? He looks almost exactly like Terrell Pryor when he's playing.
Oh, really? It's JT something or other. It's some JC something. I don't remember his name, but he's a freshman, right? A redshirt freshman?
I think he played last year because it felt like they tried very hard to get him into games. I guess I don't remember because the only game I really... Did the Badgers play Ohio State last year?
I believe so. I don't even remember anymore at this point, but I think they did.
Oh, yeah, I think they did. Yeah, they lost to him early in the season. But I'm just thinking, because I think he played some series during the Khalil Mack versus Ohio State game,
which
I don't know if you watched that. That was one of the best games I saw all last year. One guy versus it was basically Khalil Mack versus Ohio State, and he almost won.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now it's my turn. Do we want to break down who we think's going to win the national championship, or we should probably wait on that, right?
Yeah, we can hold off on that.
Okay. So I was thinking about different guys in the NFL, and I want to know who you think are the most who is the most overrated and the most underrated coach in the NFL right now.
Wow, that's really tough without having thought about this at all here.
That's the point of Crossfire.
Yeah, that's tough though. It's so hard. Let's see here. Most overrated. I am going to say, I'll say Pete Carroll.
Okay.
How
could you say that? Oh, boy.
And maybe I would change my mind if I had a few more minutes to think about this, but I just think that that defense and that defensive coordinator, I mean, he always had good defenses at USC and stuff, but, I mean, there was a recruiting difference there. I just feel like his GM has done such a good job piecing things together, and I'm not taking things away from Pete Carroll. I think he's been a good coach, but I think that the Seahawks' success is maybe more of the team that was put together more so than what Pete Carroll's done.
Sure.
And let's see here, for underrated coach. Well, man, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
Underrated coach. I guess.
Do you want me to talk about my most overrated while you think about it?
Yeah, give me a second to think here. Go for it.
All right, my most overrated coach is, there might be somebody I think of once we get off the call, but it's got to be Jeff Fisher, doesn't it? People talk about him like he is up in this upper echelon of coaches all time, and the guy's coached for like 20 years, and what has he been in the playoffs? Six times? Seven times? He had that one great run in 1999. He had some good teams in that era, and he's been coasting off that ever since. Nobody's talking about Jeff Fisher being on the hot seat, and he's had 2 7-9 seasons. This is the same way in Tennessee. People forget. They talk about, oh, man, he had a good team in 99 that went to the Super Bowl. And then in 2000, they had a good team. They had good teams in 02 and 03. He started coaching the Oilers in 94, and they did nothing up to that point. Then after that success, they did nothing after that other than one token playoff berth with Vince Young, which they lost the first game. Then they got to the playoffs inexplicably as the number one seed with Kerry Collins, lost the first game, and he hasn't been back to the playoffs since. I like Jeff Fisher. I respect Jeff Fisher. He doesn't deserve the respect he gets.
No, that's a really good one, too. And I think that's probably, if I were to be able to change mine, that's probably who I would switch it to, too.
You can change it. There's no rules.
I'm not going to do it. I'm not that kind of guy. And then for mine, I don't know if you maybe had a hard time with this, too. I'm having a really hard time coming up with an underrated coach. Maybe it's just the day and age we're in that everybody's talked about all the time.
Uh-huh.
But I'm going to actually say a new coach. Well, not brand new, but I'm going to say Ken Wisenhunt. And he's back in the
That's
seat
fair.
Now with the Titans. And I think that, you know, what he did in Arizona was unreal. And for him to get canned as quickly as he did after things kind of went sour, I think was unfair. So if I have to pick somebody who I think could maybe turn around a bad Titans team, I'll pick him.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a good one. You took the Arizona Cardinals to the Super Bowl. That should be on your tombstone. But I cheated a little bit here, and I looked up a list of current NFL coaches so I could look them up.
Yeah, crossfire, huh? That's the whole point.
Well, I mean, I did it fast. It's part of the crossfire. I didn't do it beforehand. I gotta say, it might sound obvious, but what about John Harbaugh? The guy's a Super Bowl champion. He's made the playoffs almost every year. Nobody talks about him as a potential all-time great coach. I mean, you think about guys like Mike Holmgren and like Mike Shanahan, who once they won a Super Bowl, people talked about him constantly as like a genius. Sean Payton is enjoying that right now. Mike McCarthy to a lesser extent, but certainly in that realm, hardly anybody talks about John Harbaugh when they talk about the best coaches in the NFL. And I guess while we're talking about that, you could probably throw Mike Tomlin in there too as another guy who doesn't probably get the respect he deserves for having done what he's done.
Sure. Yeah, and I guess Harbaugh was my next one, and maybe I do hear him talked about quite a bit, maybe just because he's Jim's brother, but
yeah.
I guess that's why I kind of canceled that one out. But no, that's a really good one. He's definitely not kind of really mentioned with the top guys up there, the Sean Paytons and the Belichicks, when he probably should be.
Yeah, and what about Tom Coughlin?
Well, yeah, that was my other choice for underrated too, but I think he's pretty much cemented his legacy at this point. To be able to win two Super Bowls with the Giants is unbelievable.
Is he a Hall of Famer, Tom Coughlin?
Yeah, I think so. I think the only thing that detracts is, you know, even when they've won the Super Bowl, the seasons have been kind of average, and he's never really been on a dominant team. I mean, one Jacksonville team was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, they're always just kind of average to good, and they just win a lot of games in the playoffs.
Yeah, he's a weird one because you never should have to feel like you stole a Super Bowl, but his two Super Bowl wins kind of feel like that. He's had some other good teams, like you said, that they had a really dominant Jacksonville team in 99, and then the Giants, the year after they won that first Super Bowl, was really, really good. Maybe the best team in the NFL and kind of laid an egg in the playoffs, but does anybody even think of him in the same mindset that they think of a guy even like Mike Holmgren or Shanahan again or Dick Vermeil? He's won two Super Bowls, and I think people think those three are better coaches.
Yeah, I would agree.
All right. Your turn.
All right, so my last one here, another quarterback question here. Who is going to play more games this year, Michael Vick or Kirk Cousins?
Oof. I got to say Kirk Cousins because I think that bringing the injury factor in again, I think RG3 has a better chance of getting injured than Geno Smith does. And they seem very, very committed to Geno Smith, and I think it was Mike Greenberg was talking about how he thought Geno Smith was going to have this breakout season, and I guess still in my head I think about that first part of what would it have been, 2012 at West Virginia with how good he is. So I feel like Geno Smith's going to turn the corner sooner or later, and I feel like the Jets will go down with the ship fast. They'll be consistent to Geno Smith even if he's a little banged up, and I feel like RG3 is probably a better player, but I just feel like he's going to get injured. And then with last year, and you told me he was a tool, so maybe his teammates don't really like him, and so maybe Kirk Cousins will get a chance. And he probably has that locker room behind him, whereas Michael Vick is new.
Well, and we kind of got that vibe last year, right, from RG3, that some of his teammates weren't crazy about him. I think, like, Garcon said something or other.
Yeah, they alluded to it kind of subtly that you thought in the media, if you were hearing that everybody was against Shanahan, and that didn't really seem to be the case.
Yeah, wouldn't it be crazy if, after maybe this year, if Kirk Cousins takes over as the permanent starter after all they give up for RG3, and then Cousins is the one that turns out to maybe be the good starter?
Yeah.
Oh, this is a really tough one. I think RG3, like you said, is probably going to get hurt at some point, and I think Cousins is probably the better backup even, but I'm going to say Michael Vick just because I think Geno Smith is so spotty sometimes that at least he was last year, that he's so.
Yeah. But he was a rookie, too.
Yeah, but I mean, he had a whole month, I think, where he, like, didn't even throw a touchdown. It just looked really bad, where I think the Redskins are more tied into RG3 and him being their guy than maybe even Geno Smith for the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'm really torn on it, but I guess I would say maybe Vic will play more. But I don't think either of them will play very much.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. Who does Mark Sanchez play for now?
He is the backup for the Eagles, and he's looked amazing so far this preseason, apparently.
Are you serious? Wow.
Yeah.
Is he going to play any games with Nick Foles or not?
I wouldn't imagine so unless Foles gets hurt. Apparently, the big trade talks is now that Sanchez is the big guy everybody's targeting. If they, you know, like the Rams should go get Sanchez just because he's looked good in a couple of preseason games.
Yeah, that sounds like an awful idea. I hate Sanchez's throwing motion. He's in, like, the Tim Couch, Chad Pennington school, where I'm like, I don't care how good you are, I just hate the way you throw the ball. It looks stupid, and so I don't hope you're successful.
That's harsh.
It is. Blaine Gabbert, too. I don't know why. There's some... Kerry Collins. He has this weird throwing motion. It just looks cool. I'm like, I'd rather watch Kerry Collins struggle than Mark Sanchez throw for 400 yards.
Yeah.
One last crossfire. Who do you think has a cool throwing motion, and who do you think has a stupid one all time?
Ooh, I think Brett's my all-time favorite throwing motion.
Yeah.
Just because it's a little different. I mean, there's been guys with picture-perfect throwing motions, and Brett was that. He had the rightful arm, but he always, you know, kind of falling away and stuff. It was kind of cool. Worst throwing motion, I'll say Kyle Bowler, the push.
Oh, Kyle Bowler.
The shot put with the ball, yeah.
Oh, that Kyle Bowler.
Looked like the ball weighed 100 pounds.
Yeah, he really did. All right, you definitely win with Kyle Bowler. I got to agree on that. I'll throw a dark horse in there for coolest throwing motion. Troy Aikman, super compact, looked very powerful. So I'll say that Troy Aikman had a very cool throwing motion.
Yeah.
All right, so that's a cool way to end crossfire. And
wait,
that
your worst?
Oh, I said Kyle Bowler.
You can't agree with me. You got to give me somebody else.
Oh. All right. Let's try to think of somebody else who had a horrible throwing motion.
Bernie Kosar?
But I love Bernie too much to throw him under the bus like that. Give me a minute here. There's got to be somebody out there. While I'm thinking, an underrated, really cool throwing motion, Brian Griese. When I was watching the highlights the other day of that NFL primetime, Brian Griese has a very underrated, cool, compact throwing motion.
Alright.
Chad Pennington. I hate Chad Penningtons. He's another guy who, he throws the ball like his rotator cuff doesn't exist. It's just, it's like it's weird kind of, I imagine him saying that as he throws the ball. So I'll put Chad Pennington. I still think you win with Kyle Bowler, but I'll put Chad Pennington in there.
All right, that's a good one, too.
All right, so that ends Crossfire. Like we said before, if you want to get involved in the debate, send us a message on Facebook, tweet at us. You can send us an email at greenandgoldpodcast@gmail.com or leave a comment beneath this podcast on the website. So now we go to the last preseason game, and one of the questions that I've heard people talk about today is whether or not Aaron Rodgers will end up playing to get some rapport built up with, now I'm blanking on his name. Who's our new center?
Now I can't even think of it either, but the backup center.
With the backup center from Ohio State.
I'll look it up real quick.
Lindsey.
Yeah, Lindsley.
Lindsley, Corey Lindsley. So whether or not he's going to play with Lindsley. So do you think that, would you play Rodgers just to get some rapport with the center, or is it not that important? It's not worth the risk?
No, I don't think you do. I mean, that's something they can work on all day in practice. You can have live guys coming at the center in practice. You don't need to throw them in against a hostile team against them. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a good enough reason to suit him up.
Yeah, I would agree. All right, so we have one more week yet, arguably the worst game you will see all season. The fourth preseason game, even for fanatics like me and Matt, I guess at the risk of speaking for you, Matt, this game sucks. It's never that entertaining. I watch it every year, but it's so boring, and most of the guys playing aren't on any team at the same time the following week.
Right.
So,
we'll watch it. What day is that game?
It's on Thursday.
Thursday. I mean, we'll all watch it, but it's going to be a kind of game where you do something else while you're watching it.
Absolutely, yeah. Usually on mute as you're watching something else on your iPad or whatever, or just reading or whatever. What do people do these days? I don't know. I always just watch football.
Yep.
Okay, so we'll be back next week, hopefully to talk about, well, not hopefully, definitely, to talk about the Packers and Seattle Seahawks, which will be 3 days away from this time next week, and I can't believe it's that close. I'm very excited, and I'm sure we'll have tons to say about that game. But in the meantime, let us know your thoughts on the show, and try to enjoy the last week of the preseason. Take care, everyone.